Jack Vaughn. I'm speaking to you today for the Talking Data podcast. Talking as usual with my comrade in arms, Ed Burns. And for search business analytics, Ed recently did a easing feature. It went through some of the ups and downs we're seeing related to artificial intelligence and some of the comments of the folks who are pursuing that undertaking at the moment. So in terms of what you're finding, you're finding a big, almost a gold rush, a lot of hyperbole around the topic, and yet when you go down and try to see what's going on, things seem to be moving at a bit of a different clip, maybe a little slower.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that was kind of the point of the article that just went up. Basically talking about really high on the idea of what AI and machine learning can deliver. But when you look around at the tools that are actually being deployed today, they're either much more limited in their scope than we would typically think of associated with real AI technology, or they're just not all that effective. The main example that the article looked at was that was that of chatbots. It was talking about how, you know, if you want something to just take an order, you know, I think Domino's Pizza has a chatbot, and you say, "Hey, get me a medium pepperoni pizza." It's pretty good at interpreting that kind of thing, but if you start getting into any kind of back and forth conversation, these things fail pretty quickly. But in spite of that, a lot of the people who I talked to for the story, they were saying that while the technology that we're calling AI today is kind of limited and not always that useful, there is really good reason to be excited about the future, that things are developing at a rapid pace, and the tools that we have today were better than the ones that we had last year. And so there is some reason for optimism, it sounds like.
Okay. Well, it reminds me a little bit of the old developer story. You know, the developers would create things and give them to people to use, and it get strange results, much different than they expected. And the old saying used to be, well, it worked on my desk. And I think you kind of mentioned that in the article, that some things that developers have built, once they get out into the real world, the effect is somewhat different.
That's right, yeah. I mean, especially with conversational technologies and learning systems, I mean, there's no real way to anticipate the kinds of things that the system is going to interact with, you know, the types of conversations that it's going to find itself learning from. And so you can't really know exactly what exactly these systems are going to be learning. And so, yeah, I mean, trying to anticipate how exactly these things are going to work out can be a little bit of a challenge at this point.
And the companies that are vying are quite varied. And I know that in your story, you discussed it to some extent, views on what areas they're coming from, where they might go, and even if some new parties might appear.
That's right. One of the people who I quote in the story is Heath Terry. He's in a research unit at the investment firm Goldman Sachs, and he was talking a lot about how, at least from his perspective, a lot of times when we see a new technology come on the scene, it's not the traditional technology companies who become the leaders in that new technology. It's often a brand new company. And I think a good example of that is search. You know, obviously, Google became one of the biggest tech companies on the planet today, basically by taking advantage of a new technology opportunity, which was internet search. Is at the time who came to define search technology, it was Google. And I think he's saying that it's going to be kind of the same thing with AI. You know, we see companies like Amazon and, again, Google Apple even all doing things with AI, and they're all trying to be the leaders in this new AI world. But what he was saying was that as the technology continues to develop, we probably shouldn't be looking at these companies, these existing players, to be the leaders in AI technology development. It's probably going to be some brand new company that we haven't even heard of yet who's going to come on the scene and really take over the AI space.
Well, I suppose they've been right before at that at his company for Heath there, Goldman Sachs. But I guess time will tell. I recall when the search engine started, and one of the problems, say, for Digital Equipment Corporation, who a lot of people don't even remember the name of, but they looked at search on the web as a great use for their latest computer, and when they were able to get most of the internet indexed and on their machine, that was kind of their goal. And at the time, they had something called Alta Vista, which was the leader, but it got pretty much overrun by Google. We'll see if Google gets Googled itself in AI. I do wonder if there's a lot of economies of scale. For the really, really big style AI, they need a lot of information, and it's these big companies that have it. There may be small companies that figure out tools that really tap it, but of course they would be targets for companies like that in terms of acquisition, talking about the bigger firms.
Right, and I also would think that Google is still in a pretty strong position when it comes to AI. I mean, you know, we all know that AI is built primarily on machine learning, and I mean, I think you'd be hard pressed to find a company that does better in machine learning and who's investing more in machine learning. So I do think it's kind of a risky proposition to just say, well, incumbent players have never been leaders in new technology, you know, even though all the signs that we're seeing today do kind of point to a company like Google being in a really good position to take advantage of these trends in AI.
So Ed, I know in this story or in your research, Heath had things to say about the outlooks for employment, for skills, for jobs, in the light of all of the AI chatbot experience now percolating. And how does it look for, say, service workers related or relative to blue collar workers or what have you?
Yeah, I think that this is always one of the more interesting questions when it comes to AI, and you know, people always debate it and they say AI will create tons of jobs, or they say AI is going to destroy tons of jobs. And Heath Terry kind of took a middle of the road approach in some ways. He did acknowledge the potential for the technology to diminish employment in some specific areas. Specifically, he talked about its effect on white-collar jobs, things like finance and supply chain management jobs, things like that. And he did acknowledge that the technology is likely to hit some of those areas fairly hard. And I suppose that means people will lose their jobs through it. But he did say that it looks like the technology, at least from his perspective, has the potential to improve productivity, which is, you know, it's going to have knock-on effects for a lot of jobs. He does see the potential for the technology to create new jobs. And so, yeah, he talked about just having faith that our economic system is dynamic enough to respond to these changes in ways that keep people busy. I think that that's asking for a lot of faith from people who stand to lose their livelihoods. But I suppose that's just where things are these days. You know, the technology is coming, and you know, a large corporation who stands to make productivity gains from it can't say no to it. But yeah, I think that does mean that we should be looking for some at least short and medium term effects on some workers.
Well, I'm going to say that for the time being, at least, Ed Burns and I both will have AI as something to do with our livelihoods. And I know that Ed will be covering this quite a bit more in days to come, months to come. This is Jack Vaughn, and again, I was joined today by Ed Burns. And we are the Talking Data Podcast. Thanks for joining us.